Berger. I am Frances Craig, and I'm a Sciatica member, Sealaska member also. And I never intended to speak, but last night when I came down and heard the people talking about the history that went before, I was reminded of when I worked with Andrew Hope and Mark Jacobs Jr. That was 20 years ago. I know, because I started working at ALP 22 years ago Sunday. So it seemed like a great long time away, and really this money and everything wasn't really too much to me, because of course I was earning salary. Nevertheless, when I realized all these things that are going on of the Alaska Native Land Claims Act, and we had such great hopes for it, and our children have such great hopes for it, I was just madder than a hatter. And after all the anger, the helplessness of it, what can we do? What can we do? But I think of those people that worked before us, and they went. Andrew Wolpe, Mark Jacobs Sr., some of these older people, they went on their own money and kept this thing alive. So I think to my children, I say, I don't want us to give it up. After all they did, I don't want them to give it up. So what? Maybe we can rescind our sale to them. Maybe some crazy lawyer will take it on. Maybe some kooky judge will give us the land back. Certainly there, it seems like any of these federal laws that are supposed to have protected our land claims, they seem to be bent in every way but right. But anyhow, I was talking to my son tonight, and I think that for my children, and for my children's sake, I think it should go on. But along with it, I think we should have education. We should have education. It doesn't matter about the lifestyles and the subsistence rights and all that. Your children, our children, will have to compete in the business world. And I know, because I have worked out at ALP, and I work with a computer, all these are coming. There's no way of turning it back. And for us, I think that is the only way to do is to go forward. I thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Craig. Thank you.
Chief Justice Berger,
thank you for allowing us to come and testify tonight. When the Alaska Native Land Claims Bill passed through Congress, many of us felt that we finally got our land. I remember growing up in Haines as a young boy. Gentlemen like Andrew Gamble, Mr. Pat Paul Sr. used to come up to Haines to go up to Clockwan and do their business. Was always for something for me and for mine in the future. It all turned out that when the land claims passed, I was in Vietnam serving my country. Sometimes not so patriotically, but nonetheless I was there serving my country that I love. The misconception started, we thought we had our land and others thought we were rich. And because they think we're rich, society's turned a lot of their doors closed in our faces. And they continue to grab what is ours. You know, a lot of the audience tonight have talked about education as a mechanism to get us through 1991. We seem to be faced with a lot of barriers in that area. I'm presently a student at Sheldon Jackson College. I believe that they provide the emotional and spiritual and academic growth that's necessary to see us through 1991 and provide Native leadership. I believe this. I believe that they're trying to rectify some of the errors of the past. I believe that they're making a very, very good attempt at this. But we still have one problem as natives in the area of education. As Mon Edgecombe, Bureau of Indian Affairs, has stepped in every time we do well and have sabotaged it. This goes on an individual basis as well. The Bureau of Indian Affairs has been a training ground. And these individuals come into our lives, and they stay there, and they continue to obstruct our progress, trying to doom us to failure. And this is one very, very sore point. We always run up against our problems, and we say, to compete, we need education. To get education, we must get past these barriers. These barriers are artificial, and they always stemmed from the Bureau of Indian Affairs. This is very important that our people understand why all the money in the world and funding will not get us past these barriers. Once we divorce ourselves from the Bureau of Indian Affairs and go on a state loan like any other citizen, we have a much, much better chance. And I just want to tell the audience tonight that these problems aren't unique to just certain individuals. I think it's very, very widespread, and that we must persevere and push ourselves beyond ourselves to reach our goals. Now, like some of the audience said tonight, we come home. Those of us that are lucky to come home, some of us spend many years in the States because we're cut off. We're cut off from coming back. We come back, there's no guarantee of a job. We see our corporations and all this corporate lawsuit. What do I tell my children? We believe in God, and we know that we know that Jesus hasn't forsaken us, see, contrary to what some people would lead you to believe. What do I tell my children? That there's thieves in the night that still want to steal what is ours. It's very, very sad that these barriers exist, and they're all artificial by an act. And we're going to have another act and another act, and it's going to go on. And we're going to be living here past 1991. The land is still going to be here. It hasn't changed. Only the social relationships have changed of the people that live on the land. We see all this turmoil. We're fighting with our own families. We just don't know what to do. And we're not looking at, we can't even look at the land claims to help us through as a self-determination mechanism anymore. The act itself has become a grab pool for anybody to reach in, single pressure issue groups like environmentalists. We just don't have any faith in it anymore. We need to go back to our old tribal ways to remain a people. And I don't really look at 1991 as the big emergency that a lot of people do, simply because the land has always been here, and so we, and we will continue to remain here. And with that, I'll make one more remark. I will be sending into your address up in Anchorage additional information, as well as a packet of letters and documents that document the barriers to my education and the doom and failure that has been predicted for me. And with Sheldon Jackson's growth that they have provided, these barriers have been removed. And like Mr. Hope mentioned the other night, the ANSCA mask, the ANILCA mask, what about the BIA mask? Once it's taken away, we see this reality. And that's where I'd like to end my remarks, is that education is very important for us, and we have to realize that we can't depend upon the mechanisms that have been set up for us. It's a setup. And with that, I'll close, and thank you for providing your time.
I didn't get your name at the beginning.
My name is Steve Neese. I'm a Sea Alaska shareholder, a Shiatica shareholder, a member of the Tlingit and Haida tribes, member of the Sipik Community Association, and an honorary member of the Angoon ANB. I have two children that were born after 1971. And with that in mind, I'm really interested in our future, and of course, the future of my people. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Is that too far? I thought it might echo or something. My name is Ted Wright. I'm a Tlingit from Sitka, Shiatica and Sea Alaska shareholder, enrolled in Sitka Community Association. When I was trying to think about what kinds of things I might want to say, one of the most important things that came to mind, I think, was something that my grandma once said. There are a lot of ways for a culture to, she didn't say it in these words, but a lot of things that older people say, they don't say in so many words, but the lessons learned just the same. Cultures oftentimes can die, not only through educational systems that forbid the speaking of a language or the dancing and singing that are traditional. They can also die through the kinds of attitudes that people perpetuate as a result of organizations they join, things that they do in those organizations, and people they support, politicians and other things. And I suppose that you get the values from the education, but you don't really have to act on them. It's a matter of personal courage. I thought it was kind of odd when I first started hearing about being a shareholder several years ago. People started to mention, I'm a Sea Alaska shareholder. I'm enrolled in Shiatica, or SCA, I'm a Shiatica shareholder. And this was when these kinds of things were fairly new. And I thought, that's odd, because I really don't identify myself as that, although I knew I was enrolled and I knew that I held shares, stocks. I didn't really see myself as a shareholder because I didn't know what a corporation was all about. I think as years have passed, a lot of us have gained a kind of identity as shareholders now. And we begin to think in terms of financial reports, stock alienation, 1991, things that were completely alien to our culture before, but things that are very important now. We didn't know anything about land management before, at least in terms of the way the Forest Service thinks about it, and the Sierra Club thinks about it, and certain other people, the BIA, Bureau of Land Management, thinks about it. And now we're starting to think about those things, and maybe a little too late. Anyway, I'm testifying before the commission in hopes that, I guess by some miracle, ANCSA will be reformed. I want to outline some of the aspects of ANCSA that I feel are harmful to the native tribes of Alaska in general, and to to those in Sitka in particular. These comments are my own personal feelings, but I think they're feelings that a lot of us share. I hope they are. The Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act was intended to be a legislated settlement of the problem of Aboriginal Indian land claims. Everyone knows the history of the Act. 11 years after the fact, 13 regional and a host of village corporations operate to increase the value of their shareholder stock and pay profit-based dividends. Most of these profit-making organizations also claim to be concerned with the social and cultural well-being of their constituent shareholders. While this is an admirable quality for a corporation, it has to be contrary to the real goals and operating procedures of the whole organization. It is nice to read a magazine or watch television and see that IBM, Arco, Exxon, AT&T, and so many others take an interest in me and my environment. They seem to be so concerned. It's nice, but it's also somewhat disturbing. I have to stop and ask myself why they're so concerned with public opinion in general, and my personal opinion in particular. It occurs to me that such advertising must exist to counter some kind of negative image. The corporation is so large and powerful, it presumes that the public has to be socialized away from a natural fear of its immensity and power. This doesn't make sense to me, especially for the ANCSA corporations that were formed under ANCSA. Why should I be so skeptical of their motives when they fund elders' conferences and sponsor cultural activities through organizational branches like a heritage foundation or a cultural committee? After all, these corporate branches are nonprofit. It occurs to me that these kinds of activities won't matter if the corporations go bankrupt. They won't matter if the stock is alienated in 1991. They won't matter if the land is lost. Although they're real nice amenities, they're not the important thing here. I would hope that my skepticism also originates in some small understanding of the relationship of political systems to the total culture of American Indian and Alaska Native tribes. Sociologists and political scientists observe Native tribes, and they wonder why they're often so underdeveloped. They ask if unity is related to power. They haven't found an answer. Well, for Alaska Natives, unity in 1991 is very much related to power. I think if they wanted to do a study there, they'd find a perfect example. If factions and conflict predominate, we will be powerless. There's no way around that I see. The fact is, if we don't unite, if we don't start thinking about things from the same perspective as shareholders or as Clinkets or Haidas or Simpsons, it's not going to matter much after 1991. I'd like to suggest here that tribal political entities, as they're called, which include ANCSA, village and regional corporations, emulate political and bureaucratic systems, organizations, institutions, or whatever you want to call them, that are too often cultural vacuums. This isn't to say that many ANCSA corporations, their leadership, do not feel strongly about maintaining the values and traditions of tribal culture. It's just that a corporation and even a nonprofit tribal organization cannot represent the value normative interests of all their constituents. Factions exist and compete because tribal members invariably differ on important issues, especially those involving the development of land. It's amazing to me that some people are so shocked by this phenomenon. They cannot believe that Indian people would dilute the potential power of the tribe by fighting among themselves. But when you consider that the struggles are so often centered on issues of land development, it makes sense. The Clinkers, like other Alaska Native groups, insofar as their ethnicity is tied to the land and to the way of life that has traditionally been linked to the land. Even apart from the notion of land, ethnicity is a powerful bond. A noted political scientist specializing in ethnic studies has said that the basic function of ethnicity is to bind individuals to a group. It informs a person where he belongs and whom he can trust. Its foundation is a sense of common manners, rituals, and values, and the limits of that commonness set boundaries for group interaction. Ethnic groups are not irrational, but they do grow out of sentiment, custom, and familiarity, rather than out of deliberate calculation. In this regard, they are unlike corporations and other functional interest groups. In my opinion, ANCSA has done more harm to Alaska Native ethnicity than anyone will ever be able to measure through hearings from commissioned reviews. The act has set brother against brother and sister against sister. Many Southeast Native people are no longer sure who they can trust. It used to be we were fairly united in our distrust of the federal government and its representative bureaucracies like the Bureau of Indian Affairs that was just talked about. Since ANCSA, we have shifted our distrust inward. We now practice Indian politics as usual, just as it has been practiced in the lower 48 for years. Issues of what to do with land from ANCSA has opened up a huge rift between some tribal members. Values once considered sacred are slowly disappearing, going the way of traditions that seem less and less important in the face of gross unemployment and the economic hardships that result. The bottom line is that an economic corporation can do little to slow the death of a culture. It is my belief that such entities can only speed the process. It seems ludicrous to suggest that angst of corporations separate themselves from issues of land use. I think most people would agree that extremer forms of that type are almost impossible anyway. What I would suggest is that corporations like Sealaska change their business as usual procedure for making decisions of land use, that is, development. What is needed is a system for making decisions about development of land that is more directly tied to the tribe's cultural values and norms. I have to presume that if one were to survey the decision-making boards of the Yangtze corporations, most would know very little about what their people, the people they represent in the political corporate system, really want to do with the land, or how these people's interests and desires are tied to strong feelings of cultural continuity and ethnic identity. In order to understand these things, corporations, I think, ought to, at the very least, form research and public affairs branches that have direct access to the boards themselves. I kind of think of corporations as computers. They don't act on instinct. For example, like a baseball player catches a fly ball in the outfield, he acts on instinct. Well, corporations are like, they're like robots. You have to program them. You can't program a robot to catch a fly ball very easily. It's just a lot more trouble than it's worth. But if they acted more on instinct, which is informed by a kind of board, or a more representative board, and a branch, public affairs and research branch, that's more tied to the tribe, then I think decisions would be much improved. I won't suggest how a corporate board or an advisory branch could be made representative. That would take a comprehensive plan. But I have heard from enough people around Sitka and Juneau and other towns to know that many boards are not very representative. They don't represent the wishes of the people. I think it's a fact that the system, the way corporations are set up politically and economically, they don't represent the people, or even the majority of people, a lot of the time that they're supposed to. Somebody once said that culture is not what concerns one, but what it concerns one to know. A lot of people talk about education being important, and Indian education being especially important. Well, I think it's important because what we learn in Indian education are the values that guide decisions. And that's something that hasn't been dealt with too much by the corporations, other than giving a bunch of money for seeing that they go to school. It hasn't been dealt with. We have no direction from corporations like Sealaska, and little is provided other than a check. And even that you have to fight for. Beyond those few comments, I have nothing else to say. I wanted to convey also the general impression that I have that we've been screwed by lawyers, and that all the resources of the tribe seem to be wasted on these kinds of efforts. I think plenty of people have testified about that, but I think if I can add my voice, repetition should lend more weight. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My name is Herman Kitka, board member on Sealaska Incorporated. I'm one of the organizers that incorporated the corporation. And I'd like to speak mostly on the frustrations that we ran across from the day we organized the organization. Some of the things that was written in the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act is so vague that lawyers are taking different avenues. We've been going down the list, we've been overcoming the hurdles. Sierra Club taking us to court on different meanings of the bill. First, it was subsistent. It said the subsistent way of life in Angoon is going to die if we cut the timber on Admiralty. By all means, if that was so, all the Sitka Indians should have been dead by now because all our timber is cut. I know when Congress set up the 50-mile radius from where we're going to select, we were going to be in trouble because the land was already sold by Forest Service to ALP. We were forced to move 5 times. And at this point, we can't afford to move. The thing they're using now, they got a restraining order against us in court. And they written the bill to say that Congress gave us a wilderness area, even though Congress says that land was a private land given to us to use for profit in our corporation. It's quite frustrating to all the board members and the shareholders. We've been fighting for survival, mostly. We have yet to see benefits from the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Our regional cooperation is also frustrating. They're not only losing little money. All the timber they sold and all the fish they pack and dumping 50% of their holdings in different companies. I don't know exactly how many millions of dollars they lost. I don't even know how much each investment or other business that they invested in, how much they were sold for and at what loss. I know they cut back 50%, and with the amount of timber they sold, they only sold $4 million profit. I know this is frustrating to our friends in Seattle. They're bringing action against the Alaska. I've been approached, and it's very frustrating. The things that they're uncovering looks to me like more mismanagement. They were paying different people too many high salaries and not even thinking of the shareholders. We were trying to hold our cooperation together. We operated on very small means. We prepared a budget and we stayed within the budget. Because the shareholders that elected us into the corporation that we formed, We wanted the shareholders to benefit. Sitka originated the land claim. I'll go back from when missionaries came among our people, they were afraid of Sitka people. They thought there were going to be an Indian uprising. So the missionary people, with the federal government, they put a ban against potlatches practicing our culture. They tried to get us to away from using our own language. So 1904, the leaders from Sitka, they held a potlatch in the Tlingit Nation. They invited the whole Southeastern into Sitka. And that was supposed to be the end of all our Tlingit culture. We're supposed to accept the modern American way of living. At that time, there was an organization that controlled the Tlingit Nation. 9 Eagle clans united. And they said in judgment of any trouble that occurred within the nation. And they called themselves Kakwantan. And this organization also died in 1904. 1912, Sitka people still felt they needed representation. My father-in-law, up in my neighbor there, Cottage Hall, they organized the Alaska Native Brotherhood, and they called the Alaska Native Brotherhood all nation clan, Tlaneitina and Tlingit. And this group, when we start to lose more of our land to people, the Western people crowding in on the people, initiated the land claim. At the time they talked about it, Alaska was divided. Believe it or not, the Tlingit Nation had a civil war, 1804, and we got divided. The southern portion was ruled by Wrangell, and Sitka remained the capital. When we got our people all back together in one unit, we pursued the land claim. 1928 convention, I joined the Alaska Native Brotherhood. And I've been a member ever since. And it's very frustrating to me to be told that we didn't have any part in the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act. I know it was initiated here. This was the big problem for Sitka. I didn't write any of my speech, so I have nothing to turn into you. And I'll leave the statement there.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. While we're waiting, I'll repeat what I said earlier, we started our meetings here in Sitka last night, and many of you who were not able to attend no doubt heard on the radio the presentations that were made, and I thought it was a very excellent way of providing the history and background to Native claims here in Southeast Alaska. And today at 10 a.m. we heard additional testimony. And then at noon, We went to the Women's Center downtown, and there quite a few Native elders were having lunch, and so we asked them to, we gave them an opportunity to give their testimony on ANCSA, and I was saying earlier that most of the elders began by saying that nobody there knew very much about it, but then they got to talking about it, and it turned out they knew all about it, and they had some very definite views on it, and it was a lively meeting that we had there, and I was very glad that Liz Howard arranged for us to go up there. And we had another meeting this afternoon, and then after the potluck supper tonight, we launched this meeting, which will be our last meeting in Sitka. We're going to Angoon tomorrow, and we're going to be there for 2 days, and then we're going to Ketchikan on Monday, and we'll be there for 2 or 3 days, and then we're going to Kluak next Thursday for 2 days, and then we're going to Metlakatla next Saturday to pay a visit to the people there. So we have a number of meetings ahead of us, and I thought you might like to know about that. Perhaps I should say that these meetings began back in February. On the West Coast, we held meetings at Amonik and Tununuk, two Yupik villages on the Bering Sea. We held meetings at Copper Center and Gulkana in the Otna region. We held a meeting at the University of Alaska at Fairbanks. The Native students asked us to come there to hear their testimony. We spent 3 days in downtown Fairbanks holding meetings there. Altogether, about 75 people testified in Fairbanks, downtown, and at the university. And I think we've held other meetings, but I can't remember where right at the moment.
May I just say something from it?
Yes, certainly.
Two of our girls are sick and they're usually so talkative and have an ear up, but the night I come off comes to something like this, the no rest, maybe till after I died, it was that soon. But anyway, I want to say this thing. The Leather Captains are a real good friends. But I guess you hear where they say that why Indians are not treated all alike. Well, we try to invite them to join A and B in the early 1914s and 16s, I guess. And old Mr. Sensio, the Sensiad. And we tried to invite these people to join us. And they were on reservation, they are on reservation now. And I understand they're trying to say to Washington, why aren't they being treated equal as Indians? Well, you heard it yesterday, all the struggles they went through, the A&D for raising money and going to Washington, when we didn't have any support, any money in the funds. And then they invite them to go into the land seat with us, and they refused. They didn't want to lose their land, and not the way they were living. They had a bigger plan than what was given to each, what is going to be given to each people in the Southeast. And
you mean the people of Metlakatla?
Yes. So when you hear this thing, they'd be saying that, well, the environment in the early years, they refused, and they didn't really fight with us to fit our lives. And so all these little things we hear along the way, and when you go to Angoon, maybe they'll picture us in the back. In a Christian way, we try to pray for them, and hoping that we'll all get together and say things together and fight like one. And we did that at the beginning, and then I don't know what the environmentalists got in and made their lawyers or environmentalists, and at least they swayed them against us. But we never really said anything. It's one thing to hurt me. But sometimes the Sentinel, the newspapers in Juneau, and here they say things real bad about us, and we never talk back to them on it because their truth is like us and related to us, and we don't want to embarrass them. But apparently they're really happy about us losing and really making a new year like action and talking, especially those young ones that don't think and say some bad things. But, our board members don't mention when they come back that they hurt you. And their ways will be different when you hear them. But like I say, only God knows our future. We can't get out with us. Not even my home, not even my money, not even my kids will die if they're able to, when the end of the world comes. And I think we should base our lives in a Christian way, and even for the United States. And I think we're in the right way when we insist that we praise to God and that the Russians will drop an atomic bomb on us. And we're not going to live here forever. And those who feel the same ways are going to die out, no matter what we do, no matter what we say. Eventually, they're going to dissolve into other. But people are married into a family, Filipinos, other people, whites. And eventually, we'll have to give our inheritance to our children. You know, we have something. We're going to lose our identity. And so, if they talk in sovereignty, who knows who will be the leader in that? Because their ways might be wrong. They're not the rightful people, or just people, or Christian people. If they don't know enough, they can mislead us. And it's very, very scary. Like my uncle Jimmy Walton told me, you know, somebody got all that money, all that big thing, because we come from a good family. My grandfather had a store. He did all the carvings, and he had first same boat, first car, and everything. And so it wasn't nothing to him. And even when he got 42 here, he was happy. And he also told me, oh, they all carried up with them. He also told me. Everybody else had a lot of things, and they can't carry them. So I hope we work together for the good and in Jesus Christ healing. This is what I want to say only in case of the Kavla talking that way. Somebody will misunderstand in my people is treating them. But if we invited them so many times and we came this far, and they tried to jump on the bandwagon, maybe if we didn't, or maybe they'll improve us, I don't know. But education is the thing that we are trying to find out about, too.
Well, thank you, Mrs. Jones. Well, would anybody else like to make a presentation this evening?
The Honorable Justice Berger, glad that you've had these hearings and come to Southeast. And my name is George Ridley. And I am a Sea Alaska shareholder, but not of Sitka. I am registered in Ketchikan, but now I live in Sitka. I am half Tlingit and half Tsimshian. This act, which gave the natives money and these lands, and I don't know whether like you heard before, they say they expected instant business executives. And either that or else they expected us to fall flat in our face. And right now that can go either way, I think. And in the land, there's a lot of lands that haven't even been conveyed to the corporations as of now. And I think we're on a downhill side of 20 years. So I don't even know what's going to happen in 1991, which I don't think, unless it's pushed, I don't think much of anything will happen. And I'm here just as a concerned shareholder. I see and hear of all these, corporations, you know, the mismanagement of, not just, I travel, although I live here, I don't work here, I travel the state, I work construction. So I talk to all the people, you know, that I've gone to school in Edgecombe and SJ, both. And I talk to all the ones I've seen up and down the state, and I think most of them are in the same boat, really. I think you'll find that out, you know, once you've made your rounds. And to me, people, even now, people who are running the corporations, like say, lack the experience to deal with corporate executives of other big businesses. And therefore, we're not realizing the potential that we could. Like, you know, there are a few young people that are going to law school or whatever, and I don't know, they expect them to be instant executives. I don't know. I mean, to me, if I want a lawyer or a doctor or whatever, I want somebody with a track record. I want somebody, if somebody's going to cut on me, I want somebody that's a specialist. You know, I don't want somebody that just graduated. And so I'd like to, they bring in a few people that are corporate executives, but a lot of them tie their hands where they cannot make policy decisions. And after a while they get discouraged and leave or whatever, or they drive them out, whatever. To give them enough responsibility or whatever to make decisions without tying their hands. And I think that has to be done soon, otherwise 1991 will come along and we won't have anything. I think one way to hold, you hear of people dumping their shares or something. I think one good way of trying to get away from that is to have the corporate be solvent enough where the shareholders will hang on to their stock rather than trying to dump it. And the only way to do that is by sound investments and sound management. As far as the self-determination and self-rule, which I think Sitka has a lot of head start than most communities, but then you hear of helping neighbors and hear of neighbors helping each other as well as communities. And in a way, whether you can call it a union or not, but I mean by helping each other, whether it's one corporation that can help another corporation that is floundering. But the first, that corporation has to, you know, be on its own feet first. But then, right now, a lot of them are really floundering and bickering, whatever. The average stockholder is not informed of what is going on in the corporations. If you, a lot of things that I'm saying is that you've heard before, and you'll hear it again. But I think, you know, to me, that is important. And I think you'd have to help each other, whether it's your own corporation or another corporation or whatever. And it was proposed, I seen in the Fairbanks paper, by that corporation up there, which he, one of them proposed that the Native, all the corporations unify in one, but then that corporation that, well, the man who did that, he was ahead of it, and they had their worst year in history last year.
He was the new head.
Yeah, but there's still that corporation had their worst year in history. And it was brought up last night about dealing with Oriental executives, that they know their business and how to deal worldwide. And also could be said about big business in the United States, whether they're executives or lawyers or lobbyists or legislators who work for big business interests. And all these are my own observations. And I travel a lot, and it's hard for me to make roots because, you know, I travel a lot. And two locations in Alaska. And big business is just making money off of us, whether they're lawyers or and we're just struggling to survive. And as to where we're going, I'd like to see qualified people brought in to run the corporations as a business, profit-making business, and to keep shareholders more informed what they are doing and what they plan to do in the future. And where all possible, to hire shareholders. And for those who wish to enter the corporate world, to take the formal training and then not expect them to go jump right in to run as the corporate executive, but to serve, to climb the corporate ladder from the bottom and to work their way up. And to me, that is an important issue. On another thought of, in a way of unity, there are enough Natives, whether it's locally, regionally, or statewide, to, if they get involved in even the vote or get involved in political parties, whatever, you know, to study the issues. This is a election year to study the issues and the people running. And if we can, whether you stay together or you can have political clout, you know, but you have to get together first. And another thing that has nothing to do with the Settlement Act, far as work goes, I belong to a trade union, and I, like I say, I travel, and there is hardly any natives in the trade union, in the trades, construction trades. And there are offices, well, one I know in Anchorage there, where there, it's a job, I forgot the name of the program, that help people get into apprenticeship programs. Whether, I mean, they're not related to just one trade union, they're related to all of them. And to know when their registration is and everything. The union I belong to, I think there are four natives, that's it. And
four in Alaska?
Yeah, just in Alaska. Well, the union I belong to, yes. But I think I belong to the smallest union in Alaska.
What's that one?
I'm an insulator. We have a union hall in Anchorage. We have about 125 people in our local, statewide. And that is probably all I have to say right now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ridley.
Judge Berger, I'm Irene Paul, a shareholder from Shattuck in Sealaska, born and raised in Angoon. And it just seems not that long ago, I was one of the enumerators that was signing people up for the this Land Suit Act. At that time, when we had our workshop in Juneau, they told us we had to sign them and couldn't persuade them to whatever town they wanted to sign up for. And at that time, I remember I had a time trying to convince our elderly people to sign or enroll at that time, because they were tired of filling out papers, they claimed, because at that time they were saying we did not benefit anything from our Tlingit N'haida Land Suit Act, and here we are signing up for something. What's to say we're to benefit from it? And I had to talk to them and make them understand that this was altogether different. And their concern at that time was that a lot of times we get people in there and they say they get benefit out of us, and here we are as elders, we don't get anything. And up today, I see that again. See, I work in a hospital and I work with these elderly people. And I listen to them, and they say there's people coming around asking us about 1991. What are we going to do with our stock? And some of them are even saying, maybe we should sell it back to them. Maybe we'll get something out of it then. Because it's been this long in our small villages, and we still have not gotten anything from it. Our young people are traveling and getting us our supposedly things to better for our betterment. And these are the cries I hear from the elders. And another thing I always feel bad over is our elders, because they do not understand our English language, they are persuaded to sign things, and they never realizing that they are signing something for a petition. I come from Angoon, and a lot of them I see in the hospital. And even now, what I say about this, it's got us disagreeing with each other, fighting over lands. And I grew up in Angoon, and I don't remember having to get all those food they claim they get from that cove that Shattuck chose. And it's my own brother that's a mayor over there. And I listen to it, and I listen to my people. And the elders do concern me, and the young people with education concern me. As a mother, I raised 9 children and then went to work after they were all going to school, and went to school to educate myself so I can work with my people. And when I listen to them and hear their concerns, I think my husband gets really tired of hearing me tell him just what their cries are. And our young people, like he was saying, that our culture died with the alienness, our culture. But I say our culture, our elders succeeded in what they wanted because they wanted their young people to get educated. They didn't want us to stay back there and with our culture. But at the same time, our elders are too, they respect people too much, so they talk in English, even though they did not get their education, they talk in English. I know my father did not have education, but yet he used to talk to me in English. And if it wasn't for my great-great-grandmother, I wouldn't know my Tlingit language. I've yet to go to school to learn to write it and read it. That I'm sorry, I do not know, but I do understand them. And going back to work with them at the hospital, I had to remember and go back to my, like the elders always say, I'm going to speak in my native tongue. And sometimes when we interpret for them, we misinterpret for them. I remember my great-great-grandmother always told me, be careful what you say, because it comes back at you in a different way. And remember where you came from. And that's how come now we look at each other, and if you're not careful, you'll sue each other. And that's not what I don't think our ancestors wanted us to do. I know they started the Alaska Native Brotherhood and Alaska Native Sisterhood.